Joining us on the show today is Kurt Kaluse at execspec.net. And Kurt, oil production out of the U.S. is climbing to new record highs. So the U.S. is just dominating in terms of its oil production numbers.
Yes, it certainly is. New record highs. Natural gas is, production, of course, is it gets an extra kicker of supply because some of the natural gas is unwanted natural gas production. When you're finding oil, especially in some of the Permian areas, you get natural gas whether you want it or not. So we have an extra supply of natural gas that's been flooding the markets, keeping prices very, very low. And as you know, I was looking for oil and natural gas to go lower here last month and a half or so. So that has taken place. But yes, the U.S. is the leading producer of both of those. But the Saudis, certainly Russia, have removed, what, 1.5 million barrels a day from the markets. The forecasters keep thinking that we're going to have increased consumption demand out there, they thought. The big oil majors have been buying up the little companies, making people very bullish on the energy stocks. Yeah, we've had a series of corrections here the last 6 weeks or so, and big vaunted $80 support level gave way, as we talked about it going to occur, and hit $75 so far. We might go a bit lower over into the wintertime. I don't see a whole lot of risk down below that, but more of a trading range market. I just don't see the bullish upside. You have the economies out there weakening. There's signs of petroleum and lubricants shrinking. And China, is their recovery plans keep faltering. The world economy is slowing. Doesn't mean it's going into a deep recession, which might cause oil to really collapse. If the world really did fall down hard and high unemployment were to take place, yeah, then you could see oil really break its key $60 support area and fall even lower. But currently, I don't see it that severe yet. Just a more depressing period here into the winter months, whether it's December, January, February that we bottom out, we'll see. But currently, the picture is, you know, I'd say at this point that we've had a decline, I'd say it's neutral to negative, but I don't see a big upside kicker other than a lucky surprise shock from the oil through the exogenous event of a attack on Iran or Turkey getting involved in the Middle Eastern war. That would definitely change the picture somewhat. I think too many people were looking for something bullish to happen. They're expecting it. And those expectations mean they already had bought up their oil shares. And so it didn't take much for the markets to look for an excuse to sell off and run those longs out of the market.
Yeah, and 2023 is very, very likely, given the data that we've seen so far, to be a new record year for oil production, outpacing every other year that we've seen prior. So it's amazing to see how much oil the U.S. is producing, having overtaken every other country, including Saudi Arabia now at this point. So we produce more oil than even Saudi Arabia. So that is a major change to the geopolitical energy landscape when, you know, you see U.S. overtaking Saudi Arabia, Russia, all these other countries.
I would add that, yes, I've been saying for years really now, I think that Saudi Arabia, whatever the Middle East countries decide to cut back production, to raise prices, to control the markets, to so-called stabilize prices. It's always been a ruse, of course, but every time they do that, I say, great, they're just transferring market share to the U.S. The U.S. has the ability to increase production, maybe at a slower pace than in some past cycles. We have increased production to record levels, despite, in what I've also argued, we have one hand kind of tied behind our back. And we're still increasing production each year, which is fantastic. You know, we're lacking pipelines, LNG ports, and the transportation system to really export more than we more of what we have that's surplus. It keeps our natural gas prices down, certainly. And we are very energy independent in that sense. But it's great. They're transferring market share to the United States. And that's a good thing in that sense. And now they've gotten to the point that even if Saudi Arabia or Russia decided to go all out and try to increase production to maximize the capacity and really knock us out of business, so to speak, short term, it's going to be difficult for them to do that because, you know, we now have more capacity than they do without some massive investment. And Russia's investment potential is very limited now with the Ukraine situation. They're being cut off from technology and the fact that Western countries basically ran their oil fields. So they have potentially a very long-term deterioration in their production ability anyway. So the big swing people of the past are now in the past, Russia and Saudi Arabia. More and more that swing potential is being transferred to the U.S. So that's a good thing for us.
Yeah, it certainly is. And, you know, Peter Zeihan has been talking about for years with the big explosion that we've seen in the shale sector with the amount of production that we're now seeing due to fracking and horizontal drilling because of those twin technological developments. You know, as the U.S. continues to become this major exporter and producer of oil, that has a whole bunch of ripple effects, not the least of which is that that's going to help for a reindustrialization of our own country, because now you're going to want to see companies that rely on these inputs and all the downstream inputs that come from them closer to home. So yeah, he's been very bullish on the U.S. outlook as part of this process. So it's just a very interesting development. And obviously, it's something that's going to have a large number of implications for jobs, for where manufacturing is located. And we're seeing a lot of building out of this sector, of course, with construction spending continuing to go just parabolic right now, as we see reshoring and a lot of other things happening. We spoke with Moody's Analytics, Chris DeRedis, and as well as Bloomberg Economics, Anna Wong. And both of them said that they saw increasing headwinds through the later part of this year and are particularly eyeing the first part of 2024 as a time where we may see a slowdown. Chris DeRedis characterized it as a slow session. So somewhere between a slowdown, economic slowdown, and a recession. Anna Wong was a little bit more on the mild recession side of things for the first part of 2024. What is your outlook currently?
The message is somewhat similar as before. I mean, certainly a clock will be right eventually if it's broken, that you will have a economy that goes into deep contraction, high unemployment, which people typically expect after a strong expansion. And I've been hearing that now for, what, 6 or 7 quarters, that a couple of quarters from now, we will have a recession with higher unemployment. So the way I characterize it is, if there's one word that summarized the picture out there, I'd say it's normalizing. We are normalizing for the past 18 months from a very stimulated economy, excess demand over supply that created inflation. So it was natural to expect a slowdown, but when you have that mandatory slowdown that you're going to get after such an expansion, it doesn't always mean that you have to go into a deep contraction, although that's been the history of economic cycles. The cycle is much different this time in that the stimulus was at such record levels, had such forward demand pulled into the present that the supply chain could not keep up with it. So the supply chain is easing off in many areas. It's normalized. There's some areas of slack perhaps that can be found. But even when you look at things like the PMI for manufacturing, one of the bigger areas that's focused on a lot for a proxy indicator of the future economy and leading indicators, you know, it's been contracting in terms of sentiment surveys for, what, 10 months straight, I think. Yet it's not like they're throwing people out of work. We had multi-year highs, pre-COVID highs in manufacturing employment. It's rolling over. It's been pretty flat this year so far and rolling over maybe a little bit near term, perhaps. But we're a long way from seeing tremendous slack that's causing some sort of contraction. Our personal outlook in manufacturing is still seeing record backlogs that are providing a very steady outlook for the future. So we would say our outlook is kind of flat, but at great levels with potential to grow in the sense of working down backlogs. So that one area, for instance, that is highlighted quite a bit is not showing signs of trouble. And we look at construction, it's hitting new record highs, all-time highs in employment. Travel and leisure, still near multi-year highs, doing quite well. They can't find enough workers. So there's a lot of reason to think that you don't have immediate trouble on the horizon. Can we break the cycle of going from expansion to deep contraction? That is still a question to be answered. But so far, the indications are we're just normalizing. We have to have some contraction to some degree in some areas to normalize inflation and bring interest rates back down. You know, will things go beyond that normalizing equilibrium? It could, but currently there's no sign of that in the near term, of a deep contraction or panic going on out there. And since the bull market in stocks peaked up in 2021, inflation peaked in summer of 22, you know, that's been the overarching debate. bears wondering and concluding that expansions always lead to deep contractions. So we don't see that yet. Delinquencies are rising, but they're still considered to be normalizing, not alarming. Checking accounts are falling, that's true, in the lower income brackets, but overall not bad as we remain at full employment and still have good signs of spending going on with job growth, not contraction there, millions of unfilled jobs out there. So there's some good signs out there. We had a mid-cycle peak in growth in the GDP this last quarter. We're going to slow down from that. We should continue slowing into the first half of next year. And yes, we could, like the people you reflected upon, have some more slowdown in the first part of 24. Doesn't necessarily mean something alarming, but a slowdown is needed, and we'll see how far it goes.
Yeah, one of the interesting things about all of this is I totally agree with you. You know, there's been calls for a recession now for multiple quarters. But the thing is as you just recently wrote on your website, execspec.net, I mean, we have trillions of dollars coming from the federal government. And if I go to treasury.gov, they have a page dedicated to how much is U.S. government spending. And it says U.S. government has spent $6.13 trillion in fiscal year 2023 to ensure the well-being of the people of the United States. So $6 trillion, that's just fiscal year 2023. If we look at last fiscal year, it was $6.27 trillion. So we actually have seen a decline by $137 billion, which is almost a rounding error when you're talking about trillions and trillions of dollars. But be that the case, it just boggles the mind, you know, how much of an influence is all the spending having? Because I imagine the outlook would be rather different if we weren't spending, you know, $6 trillion.
Absolutely. If you take away a couple trillion dollars of spending the last couple of years, each year, it would be a very different picture. Of course, the deficits typically shrink as you go into expansion phase when everyone's fully employed. Obviously, you don't need all the transfer checks, welfare and food stamps and things are not in such great demand when everyone has a job. Everyone that wants a job has a job and wages are going up. So that is unfortunately a political cycle. Current administration was lucky enough to have the clout to pass things before it was too late, before the expansion cycle was over. They passed a multi-year set of spending bills that are going on today and next year that, from what I understand, I can't even keep track of the numbers, but I've heard between $2 and $2.5 trillion deficit potentially this year. That is mind-boggling that it should be going down, you would think, down to maybe half a trillion or at least 1 trillion. Instead, it's going up. So it's these are the good times. I hate to see what the bad times are like.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very good point. Now, you recently wrote that the consumers are running out of COVID cash, and you touched upon this at the very beginning in terms of the outlook for the amount of spending. There's been increasing amount of data crossing by my desk showing that credit card balances are exploding higher. And so consumers appear to be taking on more and more debt, credit card debt, in order to finance this consumption. They're not doing so, you know, from savings or necessarily from wage increases, from income itself. And, you know, we're not seeing some of the wage increases, strong wage increases that we saw in the prior year or so, which was helping to spur this growth. So what is your outlook in terms of the longevity or the duration of consumer spending? Because I think as many of our listeners know, you know, it comprises around 2/3 of domestic economic activity. So if you want to know where the U.S. economy is heading, you really do want to keep a close eye on the consumer.
Certainly, that's something we have to watch because the issue has been overconsumption. The government basically gave sugar to everybody and they are on a high. So they had too much consumption. As early on in the expansion cycle, I think I estimated that it was something like 2.5 to 3 trillion above trend line growth. That gap is narrowing as we speak this year, but we are still at a level of spending consumption that is above expansion trend line growth long term. So it's a delicate balance, perhaps bringing spending consumption down to appropriate levels over time. If we can slow down the growth, the lines will converge and you'll have a more normalized consumption pattern, which will be healthy. So as we get there, there's obviously going to be some stress in the system with credit spreads. Perhaps the areas of consumer debt would be mortgages, credit cards, auto loans. But in credit cards have jumped up a bit, the delinquency rates. We have to watch that. But I still wouldn't say it's at alarming levels. There might be some pockets. Like I said, the lower income levels are seeing more stress than they have been for quite a while. They finally spent that COVID free cash and exhausted some of their earnings, steady income and disposable income, and gone a little bit more into their cash. So they don't have as much free spending. They're not the majority spenders, but they have lost some of that clout. So their delinquency rates, we'll have to watch that. Lower quality things are deteriorating somewhat. I think overall, the levels are not that bad, though. Certainly in the mortgage area, that's all locked. That market's very locked up. So people have very low debt income ratios there compared to the past for what they already have existing in their mortgages. But the auto and credit card areas have to be watched a bit. They are still at respectable levels. Again, I think we're just normalizing. We might tip the scale a little bit above pre-COVID, but that was not a bad time. So even if we're at 10-year highs, that is still not necessarily a terrible time for the delinquency rates. So something to watch, default rates, but I wouldn't say it's alarming at this point.
Okay. So again, when we think about the broader economic outlook, you still believe that the economy is going to normalize, that we're not going to see a recession. You don't see any, you know, red flags for an imminent recession. We may see some slowing growth on spending and in other areas, but you're not looking at a contraction as of yet. You think that there's still some tailwinds behind the U.S. economy at present. Along those lines, when we spoke with you last time in September, you had said that you did think that the U.S. bull market was still in place, that the primary trend was still higher. You did say and caution that there could be the normal swoon that we see around October, possibly even November. We did see that last month in October, but you had said that that would be a buying opportunity. That was obviously good advice. What's your outlook currently?
Yes, that brings us up to the present. I was looking for that summer peak and then a series of lows, August, and into October. There were cycle lows that were due in early and late October. Initially, was thinking that it would be a higher low in late October. It ended up being a little panic down move, breaking of support to a lower low. But nonetheless, still, October was that volatile bottoming month, as it often is, that we set up a lot of oversold indications from hedge funds to CTAs and sentiment indicators that help support the idea that this was the time to buy. So not surprised at all that we had a very seasonally strong period that typically comes into play, if not in late October, certainly by early November. We were in that period having 9+ days to the upside here straight in the stock market. Was certainly perhaps faster than one would expect, but it's not even that overbought. People have not gone to the other side of the boat yet in terms of tipping the scales, even short term. A little pause in here is in November is due now. But I think by the end of the month, in early December, I think we'll be back on the upside, probably moving to higher highs than we just saw here in early November. The outlook beyond that begins to be more trading range oriented again beyond that new high. So, you know, we may end up going, you know, 4,500 or so, but I don't see all-time record highs from a bull standpoint. And yet I don't see some sort of a cataclysmic panic to the downside without some exogenous event that we can't foresee. Anything back down to new lows on the slower economic outlook that I share. It's just a question of to what degree. I say we are normalizing until there's signs of something more severe happening. Earnings are surprising to the upside. Revenues are surprising to the upside. Guidance is being softer. Again, that is nothing scary, though, at this point. Unemployment may start ticking up, and it should. We would expect it to tick up some by the time we get into the first half of next year. And at some point, the cries for recession and something very scary, I'm sure, will begin to resonate even more as we move into next year. But currently, I don't see it being something really surprising upside. I think it still favors a selective stock market that's been led by infotech, mega cap tech. Certain sectors have not been good, such as we talked about, as you might recall, the energy sector. And that continues to be an area that I'm avoiding.
So again, I want to point out that, you know, you've been definitely on the more bullish side as we've been speaking with you, pushing back against a lot of the recession fears. At this point, it sounds like you're a little bit more cautious about 2024, expecting slow growth, but not a recession. And when it comes to the bull market outlook, again, you said today that you're expecting more of a trading range, limited upside, but also limited downside. You're not expecting a major contraction unless we were to see, of course, like some type of major exogenous event. But at least based on the data that you're looking at, the underlying trends are for not an imminent recession and perhaps a trading range with continued selectivity in the market. Would that about summarize some of the things that we discussed today, or anything you'd like to add or change to that?
Well, that's a great summary, of course, of my perspective. You touched on some important points there with Peter's analysis of the world global economy, that we have a long-term reshoring political driven effort going on. Those take years and years to accomplish. His discussion on the energy grid is just astounding. There seems to be no way that we can meet the goals that we want to have to reshore what we want in the timeline that we want. So there's this, not only do you have a demographic shrinkage of the growth of the workforce with the boomers retiring and fading away, keeping labor supplies a little bit tight, but you have this effort, a costly effort, mind you, but an effort nonetheless to cut off some of these supply chains in countries that we cannot rely upon, that we are still very dependent upon, Russia and China. Make no bones about it. We have some great dependence upon those countries for our livelihood. If push came to shove, it would not be a very fun environment to have a total embargo or trade war that went all out. So we do have to have a delicate dance here while we make this transition over the next couple of decades. But it helps the reshoring aspect, helps the employment situation. The stimulus effort keeps that going. The demographics helps that. So that's why it is difficult to have, without some sort of panic, exogenous event out there, a huge expansion in the war, what have you, it's hard to imagine a deep recession, a large spike in unemployment back up to double digits, those kind of things. Softness, yes. Normalizing, yes. A little dip below normal, perhaps, but softer, not harder landing would be the outlook as we prepare for the next growth cycle, maybe next year.
All right. Well, with that said, Kurt, would you mind telling our listeners a little bit more about your website, the best way that our listeners can get their hands on your research?
Well, thanks, Chris, again, for having me. Certainly, we focus a lot on the economy. It's a big topic, stocks, bonds, oil, metals sometimes, and try to cover the commodity area in general. But we can be reached at execspec.net, execspec.net. Thank you.
If you have any questions or feedback on what we discussed today, or if you'd like to get in touch with us at Financial Sense Wealth Management, feel free to check out our new website, financialsensewealth.com, or you can give us a call at 888-486-3939. For FS Insider, I'm Chris Sheridan. Thanks for listening.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.